Okay, I think we are a few minutes ahead of time, therefore I should just use the thing. And I mean, also since changing microphones always takes time, it makes sense to whatever bundle things that just minimizing the cost of starting a presentation. And I will talk a little bit here about Navi Server and about Navi Server 5. And say what's new there. I mean, we'll come, let's say, with a new license, and I think for the web community, I think very important thing here is TTL 9 compatibility. I mean, wouldn't say compatibility actually, but it is using the features that TTL 9 offers is also a big step for a web server, because dealing with large data is important. I mean, people are getting upset. I have just have here uploaded a file with whatever 2.5 gigabytes. I can't read this in the object. I can't read this and append to a string, whatever. It just everything blows up. Therefore, I mean there are many probably applications where TTL 9, these aspects of 64 bit is not so important. Here it is important. There are also an opportunity of having significant code changes. I will go a little bit into this, and therefore have the new version number. And I will just pick up a couple of the larger changes here. I mean, don't go to the change set, and we'll come to the details here. And it's about, let's say, part of the whatever scalability, part of the, let's say, functionality point of view, and part of the thing of moving into a distributed environment, and then also for the next steps. I mean, why a new major number? I mean, Navi server numbers are currently ranging from, it was released as 499.0. I wasn't involved in this number, I think, and we are currently of 499.6, and it is a danger that we are continuing the last digit to go up, therefore on the time it doesn't work. And also Linux had the same problems, and at the time when Linux stepped up to version 3.20, Linux was saying, I'm running out of fingers and toes, we need a new major version number, and therefore we did it. Another reason was here, we are switching there from the Mozilla public license 1.0 and GPL, I think it was 1.1, and going to the Mozilla Public License 2.0. I mean, everybody who has agreed to Mozilla Public License 1.something also agreed that updates of the license is also covered by the first license. Therefore, for the user, it's not a big difference, but it's a difference in terms of packaging. We had in the past troubles with packaging OpenACS for Debian, whatever, because of the license were too complex and whatever, and therefore this should more or less improve things. And certainly mentioned here already, this is lifting restrictions is important, but the consequence is also that many things, I mean, Navi server is written essentially in C, and it is, there are many interfaces there which are aligned with the TTL interfaces. You pass around values, integers, whatever, and you should have the same expectation on both sides. And also, if you have an interface, own TTL, own whatever C-based commands implemented in Navi server, they should fit together. Therefore, it's there are quite some substantial changes there to get everything done correctly. And therefore, also, let's say the release of Navi server 5 will happen after the release of TTL 9. Therefore, I also have certainly interest. I mean, it doesn't make sense to say this will be TTL 9 compatible as a thing if you have no idea what this means in detail. Therefore, it's certainly. But I mean, anyhow, if you really want to use a preview version, just pick it from the Bitbucket Git repository. Then you can work with this, and it's running regularly, whatever regression tests, and the conference site was running with Navi server, or it's running with Navi server 5. Therefore, it's not something which is, but still the release will wait. And there are a couple of new features on the next slides. But Also other things worth to mention is, I think, for example, having improved crypto support. I mean, crypto support is mostly coming through OpenSSL, which is a wonderful crypto lab at the same time. And we have now also their support for Argon 2. Why is Argon 2 important? I mean, if you have password files, I mean, password cracking became pretty easy due to the world of mining and using graphic cards with high numbers of processors and parallelizing crypto stuff. Therefore, just using the traditional checksums is not really safe anymore, and there was a long competition there, and Argon 2 was the winner. It's quite complex, and the basic idea of this Argon 2 is to have a slow crypto algorithm, and you can tune it how slow it is. And slowness means you can say, I want, it has to be multiple threads, it has to be using at least so much memory, or it shouldn't be able to parallelize it, and I think this is more or less it. Therefore, you can control how long it will take to compute a password, and no one will be able to do it faster than the values which are provided. Therefore, if somebody steals a hash of a password, not a password, the hash of the password, it's getting very, very hard to break this using this algorithm. And especially for websites, it's important to have this, because if there's a security review and say, oh, well, you're still using SSH1, whatever, if it's not secure, you should make it better, and therefore it's the best of the best, more or less. And I mean, also, Navi Server 4.99 will not disappear. I mean, it is more or less a maintenance release where just the bug fixes which show up and which also apply for Navi Server 4.99 are backported there, and there will be a couple of releases coming up there. I mean, one of the changes here is the so-called NSSET reform. You say, what the hell is an NSSET? I mean, it's a data structure in C, but accessible via this NSSET command from Navi Server, which is similar to a tickle-dict, but supports duplicate keys, and every set has a name, and it predates tickle-dict significantly. It was there in the first version of Navi Server already, and it used in Navi Server everywhere. Everywhere means for header fields. I mean, the header might have multiple fields with the same tag, with the same name. Therefore, it certainly makes sense to have these duplicate keys here. It's used for configuration values. It's very normal that you define something like multiple whatever drivers you're loading there in this with the same name. It's used for SQL tuples. I mean, if you fetch data from the database, all of the attributes are afterwards accessible over this. Therefore, it's there simply. And if one is running an SQL query with 20 attributes, which is not too much, returning 1,000 tuples is not too much. I know of SQL queries returning a couple of 100,000 tuples. But this means more or less, with the current implementation, it is 43,000 malloc-free operations needed just for a single query. I mean, and this malloc-free operations takes time, and it's even worse if you have multiple threads, because the malloc space, you have to manage it. I mean, there are many mallocs, I don't want to start to talk about this, but which try to reduce the locks which are necessary to manage the available space. We're running there, all of them in different threads. It's the same address space. But it's still a lot of things. And why is this a problem? I mean, here's more or less a picture of what is the old structure. And the old structure means there are many fields there. And then every field of an NSSET has a name and a value. And these were different malloc operations. And essentially, this makes this high number. And mallocs are situated afterwards somewhere distributed in the memory. And it means at the end, this thing might scatter all of your memory, more or less. And therefore, if you have a situation there where you have multiple cores running there, these pages where this memory is sitting there are also cached there. I mean, if you rewrite one byte of a page, the whole page has to be refetched. It's significant kind of work for the processor. And the difference between having a cache value and a not cache value can be several magnitudes longer time. Therefore, it certainly makes sense to try to make a more compact representation in memory, using sometimes more, let's say, work for updates. But altogether, it improves the situation drastically, and therefore, you see in this case, there, I mean, here's essentially all of these key attribute values are put into a single D-string from Tickle, and D-string is often sized in a way that is pre-allocated in a way that is just one field there, but sometimes you need more, then you simply have therefore three or four mallocs which are necessary here. And the advantage is here afterwards you have here more cache hits and improved performance. And also one important thing is here also for NUMA architectures, this fetching stuff there, and less mutex locks, and also the memory footprint by this went down also significantly. I have here some tests were running the same query with these 20 attributes in 1 to 30 threads, and one sees just by changing the data structure there, it's the performance improved by 17%, and also the RSS is much smaller there. Another important thing here is this so-called NSHTTP reform. What is NSHTTP? NSHTTP is also a C-implemented command that runs a HTTP client side. I mean, inside the web server, you have the web server itself acts as a client for a different server. I mean, why do you need this? Typically, REST interfaces. You have something in the cloud. You get some data from there or from a different server. And it is getting more and more popular to have this quite efficiently integrated. And the whole thing is here, also authentication is typically getting from some kind of a OAuth kind infrastructure to get this data back. And this NSHTTP is based on the same infrastructure of the server itself, the same basic low-level infrastructure here, and it is significantly faster than curl if you make especially many requests. And it is also something like the HTTP client request log. Maybe I can show it here a little bit, what it does. And it shows, I mean, if we're running a large website and your performance goes down for whatever reason, you want to know why it's going down. And it might not be the problem with your website itself. It might be a problem with something in the cloud or another server. If something goes slow, you want to get information about this. Therefore, similar to this normal access log of requests coming to the web server, NaviServer maintains a log file of the client requests. How often have asked whatever this other server, what was the performance, how are these things distributed the whole day, how many things were sometimes per second, whatever, and you have a log file and you can more or less automatically analyze this log file using the NSTATS NaviServer module. It's Tickle-based, and you see here, just blanked out a little bit, it's not the FuzzyNet of the server, it's just removed here the server where it's coming from. But you see here some kind of operations over the day. It's just the June 1st to June 2nd, it's just the 24 hours time range. And you see here during the night there were a lot of, let's say, quite slow requests going on there. In this case, it's just getting huge amounts from data from other servers of having some kind of synchronization, whatever processes here. This is this bulk synchronization, and here you see also the distribution more or less of here's the request frequency, how many requests per second are sent from this particular server, and on this day we had here in the range of 70,000 HTTP client requests on the server. I mean, I've seen systems which have 200,000, 300,000 HTTP client requests per day. I mean, it's quite substantial, maybe. And it also depends certainly on the programming style and how much, let's say, cloud aware is the system. But having this there is certainly important. And it's also there, getting some kind of tabular data out there. What are the servers you ask for and how many requests were their average time and how well did it went? I mean, if something goes wrong, you want to identify the problems as soon as possible. And therefore, having these statistics is essential for maintaining the performance of a web server. And I mean, what's new here? I mean, one important change is here persistent connections. I mean, if there are many requests going out, it makes sense to keep the connection open in a multi-threaded way. Therefore, it's necessary to manage a pool of connections there of managing things. But the main thing was not there implementing this pool of connections on Navi server. The biggest, let's say, work was to, if we have persistent connections, you have to be much more strict on dealing with incoming data, which might be correct or incorrect. I mean, dealing with errors is there also more of a challenge, and there are things happening there. You have the pipelining, you have multiple requests there, just coming on the same stream and different package more or less. There's streaming HTML, where you have no content length there, and how you have to deal there if data is returned incrementally. I mean, simply by connecting to a service which implements this. I mean, you cannot wish, please send me everything in one step. The other side does what it wants. There are mainly the incorrect replies. And also this 100 continue is some kind of a mechanism where it's built in HTTP. But if you have a simple request, you simply can ignore it. Here you can't ignore it. That means there are a lot of changes here to make this happen. I mean, other things just for showing what different kinds of problems is here is also for code reforms in a way. There's a thing is called the double-checking lock pattern. That means it's a traditional thing coming from system programming in the C world. It was very long time said the right thing to get good performance and locking is having this double-checking lock pattern. What does this mean? You have here some kind of a call. If say if not initialized, initialized is here a static variable. I mean, just one instance there in the server. And if not initialized, you make a lock. And you check afterwards again if it's still unlocked, because somebody else might, after the check here, have changed this already. Therefore, concurrency is sometimes bad to you as a programmer. But it is a way to make sure that this was a dirty read. Is it still the same value as before? And if so, you do your job, and afterwards you set initialized, and you are done. This was fine for, let's say, 50 years. Fine is not completely right, but mostly fine. And there's the problem with the whole thing that is based on a thing called as a total store order. I mean, it means that the processor does what the assembly does, and also the assumption that the C code does what the assembly does. I mean, it's just multiple steps how things can be translated, and newer architecture do some kind of a reordering of instructions and the hardware reorders construction and cache concurrency, everything is getting, let's say, more concurrent these days. And for the Intel architecture, it's not an issue. I mean, Intel architecture guarantees this total store order, but newer processors not. Also older not. I mean, we had on the Learn system many years ago power architecture, and we had problems with this kind of things, actually in Tickler this time, but it was a problem there, and the solution was to implement a fence, which means implement a couple of assembly statements inserted at the right place that to make sure that there is no, let's say, there's no moving around of the code on the hardware afterwards. Implementing these fences is just to avoid here this kind of reordering here on the low level. But power architecture is not so far, and therefore, since everybody using Intel is, but we are now in the times of RISC-V, and RISC-V has the same problem there. I mean, and RISC-V has a lot of potential. I mean, if you look at the hardware news, it's a cool stuff, and I just got yesterday also a RISC-V board, and I have to set it up when I have some time, but anyhow, it's something where it is potentially much better, let's say, than the ARM architecture, and it's much cheaper. And currently, what you can get there easily is something like a 4-core single-board computer with RISC-V. Last year, you couldn't get this, but there are things coming up with building arrays of these processors, and it's a kind of an open-source architecture, and it is, especially China pushes ahead, just it is much cheaper for production at the end than, for example, the ARM architecture. and it is incremental. I mean, just if you're interested, just watch around and listen to the RISC-V people in the on YouTube. You get a lot of detailed information. What's cool about this architecture? And I think it's very nice, and it will come on the larger range. And actually, on Navi server, there were two different families there of problems dealing with, let's say, startup initialization. You just want to make sure something is initialized as before. But there's also something of dynamic data structure, which were programmed in a lazy style. You didn't care about whatever setting certain properties if you don't need it, and it was doing it at some time later, and it also was using it there. And for the first group, it's easy, relatively easy, but it needs, in every case, it needs some refactoring. You have to change the code, you have to define different function, whatever, but for the startup stuff, there's a thing, as a POSIX call, it's called pthread once, and the solution here is just to make the whole content here an own function and register this with this pthread once, and it's done. But this is only on the POSIX world, or on the, let's say, Unix, macOS world. But on Windows, you have a different thing. It's called the init once, execute once. It's the name which is coming from there, and it's doing pretty much the same thing. It's actually also, I would say, hard to say for me, but it's better actually than the POSIX version, but it's still, it's there. But the second case needs some more rewriting. And actually, to implement this, I think it was 5 to 10 commits to get this done through Navi server. And this is some kind of code changes. And this simply is going into Navi server 5, and this is not going into earlier versions because it's some larger changes here. The next thing I think which is important to mention here is to deal with. I mean, Navi server is very good on collecting statistics of what's happening in your program. I just mentioned a few things about anystats, but you have the metered mutex calls or read-write logs. You need to know how often is this mutex here called, how often it was busy, how long was the waiting time for getting an access to this mutex. And the same for read-write logs. More complicated to measure it, but it has a lot of detailed data about SQL queries and so on. It meters everything more or less. And you can use afterwards this data to decide what's best for me. Is it okay for me? Or what can I gain if I have here a machine with a single web server on the same machine, a database? What happens if I move the database away to a different machine? What happens if I build a cluster of multiple machines? What will be the overhead? And by collecting this data, you can do this. And in OpenACS 5.10.1 has now a better, let's say, cluster management. It has now here a way of saying, I'm starting here with a configuration with a single node cluster, and if I need it, I can dynamically add more nodes to the same application. That means on the fly, without reconfiguring stuff, other nodes can join in, and it allows this of having a cluster secret, and if the other node knows the cluster secret, is accepted here in the cluster and can work afterwards here together. And there are various trade-offs in this decision, something like if I have everything on the same machine, the communication between the database is very fast and will be slower if on a different machine. And the cache coherency is very simple because Navi server is also caching infrastructure. It's controlling the thing for all threads in the memory. It's just quite easy to flush the stuff there. But if you have multiple caches, it's not so easy afterwards because flushing the single memory on one machine doesn't flush it on another machine. And if that, you get afterwards some cache coherency problems if you don't do this here. And actually, also Navi server is very good on using more threads. I mean, just it's the world of getting processors with more cores is cool for Navi server because it's really able to use this whole thing. It's built around multi-threading in strong types. But sometimes you reach its limits, and the question is, I have now a machine, it is a big machine, and it's fine. But what happens if I need twice as many requests? And I have to deal with this. What are the implications? Can I do it? Do I have to, whatever, change a different technology or whatever? Therefore, it's something there. And also the question is, what is the cost afterwards in terms of response time for a single request? I mean, talking about throughput is how many requests per second you can process. But also the questions afterwards, how slow will be a single request? And here, and there's a slideshow here, some kind of data. Probably I will try to be here quick. But if you have any kind of question, please come to me. And just, it's a long story here. And here's more or less a simple setup there, having a database and Navi server on the same machine and the other machines is what happens if you, whatever, move to a different machine. But certainly, this is not something which can be said in general. I mean, because database is not the same, Postgres is not Oracle, and the question is, are we talking here about having a local area network here with a, whatever, fiber channel connections, or are we talking here about the cloud? How much is here this kind of latency here? And the implication of network latency is on database performance is quite well understood, and here's some kind of papers which show you that if the network latency is 10 milliseconds, then it can decrease the throughput by a factor of 20 of the SQL queries. The throughput goes down by a factor of 20. And this is based on PGBench. It's not a, some kind of exotic queries, it's just a large array. That means, what is now 10 milliseconds a lot or not? I mean, if you look some kind of worldwide information, I mean, typically TCP, the latest, as I say, 40 to 60 milliseconds you find often in textbook as a data. But if you have it on the same machine, it might be much less, but maybe it's just 1 millisecond, whatever, but still you have here some kind of a multiplicator which kicks in here. And therefore, it means the SQL queries will become slower. And the question is at the end, how much will this infect in my own machine? And therefore, you need some statistics. And your statistics are getting, again, from NaviServe. And I have here looked at three different machines. One of them is openss.org. The other one is here called Server 1 and Server 2 for kind of, let's say, hiding the organization behind this. And this was running there approximately here for 4 days, all of this. And you see in OpenSS.org in 4 days were 400,000 requests. That means OpenSS has something like 100,000 requests per day. Other machine here had 1 million requests per day, and I mean HTTP requests, and the other thing has here roughly 2 million requests per day. I mean, there's a quite larger thing here. And you have here also the average response times of these things, and you have here information here, for example, what was the average SQL performance there per query, and what is afterwards, how many, I have not done all data here, how many SQL requests are here per request, and by this you can calculate what is your whatever time, how much SQL time is spent in your requests on average. And you can see here this varies quite strongly here. I mean, it means here it's coming here from, let's see, the SQL time per request is here from, of this whatever, 6 milliseconds here is 2 milliseconds on average. And other things, there is quite substantial more time here, and therefore it might take some kind of longer times. And you see here the number of SQL statements per request is sometimes, for one request, you have here 38 SQL requests there. I have to say also after caching. I mean, if you deactivate caching, this thing will go up furthermore. That means NaviServe is doing here a lot of things, but you need this kind of data for estimating here afterwards the whole data. And the other side is here caching, how much caching is happening here. And caching is possibilities you can deactivate caching. It's very simple on NaviServe. You have a configuration where you say, please stop caching, and the whole thing stops caching. And therefore, how much will this cost? And a simple way of maintaining cache coherency in a cluster is to turn off caching. That means the requests will go down, but the throughput will go up from the other side because you have more nodes and they don't need a lot of synchronization times there. And also the question is, how often is the data changed? I mean, data changes requires cache flushes. And you see on openss.org, the data is pretty much stable. Not too much is changing. People are reading there, sometimes posting requests, whatever. But on other machines, there you have there something like here, on this server here, you have 1.3 or 1.4 cache flushes per request. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. And if it's cache flushing, you have to send it to all of the other nodes as well. If you have more nodes, it's getting more expensive. The question is, how fast is the connection there? I mean, it's just after it goes up. And this more or less puts in the requirement or this data there. And the first thing here, probably it's better to look there afterwards in detail through the slides, but is here to see what is the implication, let's say, of having the database on the same server and on the different machine. I mean, just having here, here's the response time in times of the base installation, we're having both on the same machine. Moving the remote SQL, you have this kind of data here with some kind of, let's say, assumptions which are founded in some kind of empirical way for this kind of applications. And you see here the factor. I mean, it's just on this machine here, it has what is 50% less performance per request. And what is the throughput implications here? The throughput is here coming from 7,000 requests per second on openss.org and going down to 5,000. But I have to say there, it doesn't matter because you don't have so many requests at all. Therefore, nobody would care. But on the other machines, it might be different. Therefore, they are running closer to the limits. Therefore, the machine is there really needed for things. And the machine of openss.org is an overkill, actually, technically speaking. But we come now to the cluster setup. What is a cluster setup? And a cluster setup, it means you have here typically a database in a different virtual machine. You have here a couple of nodes working here, and this communication there, and another thing is here, this inter-cluster communication. That means if you have caching, you have to flush the other caches. It needs some communication between all of these nodes. And for this kind of communication, NaviServer has quite a long range of, let's say, possibility. It's HTTP, HTTPS, UDP, CoAP is built in, all of them via modules. And actually, also in this place, using these persistent connections for NSHTTP comes in very handy because it simply speeds up this inter-server communication significantly, because if you have there many requests going back and forth, it's really very important there. Another way is, let's say, to avoid caching at all. I've mentioned this before. And here's some kind of data. What does it mean at the end? Here's some data with, let's say, the base response time here, deactivating caching, having remote SQL, having remote SQL and no caching, what is the sum of this, and having a setup with 4 cluster nodes, 8 cluster nodes, and the whole thing with 4 and 8 cluster nodes with caching. And what you can see here is actually not so much surprising is that it's very hard to beat the per request performance if you have everything on the same machine. I mean, it's faster. You don't need less communication overhead. It's quite good. But the thing varies here pretty much here between the servers. What are the implications of having here no cache? If you have a server which really depends on its performance on the caching stuff, it will be certainly be much worse. But here's the performance you get here. And in this performance is also calculating afterwards the cost of communication between the inter-server communication, which is turned in here. And here's the side of the throughput. What can you get from the throughput point of view? Here again, here's the baseline information. The throughput goes down if you have SQL or different server or also no caching here. And here for the cluster nodes, you see this, you can get quite a good scalability. I mean, one thing you can see that you can, let's say, throughput the performance there. With 4 to 8 cluster nodes, you can double the performance or the throughput of the server using going to the cluster. I mean, and the question is, your mileage might vary. I mean, it depends all on your application. And NaviServer collects this data, and you can use this afterwards for doing this kind of calculation and figure out what's best for you. I'm just also running on time, as the last time. And I mean, what's going on in the future? I mean, in the last presentation, I just mentioned here the work of using a NaviServer with HTTP2, and we did here some kind of also tests and showing that Navi server with an experimental, let's say, HTTP2 implementation here can outperform here on various scenarios the, let's say, competition in terms of Nginx or Apache. Is getting, especially for many small files, it's much better in terms of performance. But still, the question is HTTP2 so important? The question is arising in the terms of HTTP3, QUIC, which is UDP-based. And, I mean, the implementation is quite different. Something can be reused, but not too much of this, I have to say. And there's a lot of work going on from the OpenSSL people. And there's more or less, I say, every week there are a couple of, I mean, it's already in there, but it's still kind of on the move. And probably the best strategy is here to make here also rely on the low-level communications there, on the QUIC support built into the OpenSSL, in order to get, let's say, with reasonable effort, their Navi server with HTTP3 out of the door. I mean, this is more or less finishing up here. I mean, many of the restrictions of Navi Server 4 can be lifted by TCL 9 integration here. There are many new features. Some of them are code-breaking, therefore it's always some kind of a reform in many places on the source code. And TCL people are conservative, and Navi Server people are conservative, and OpenSSL as a combination of both, they are by the square conservative. Therefore, people really wait. I mean, people running large sites. I mean, I understand it. I mean, you do not, if you have there whatever, a couple of thousand people running on a site and say, oh, a new version, please install it and let's see what happens. No, no. It's the customers will be very unhappy and say the whole thing is running unreliable. But also here, I would say that going to the cluster helps because it's afterwards improving at the end the availability of the server. Okay, this was it from my side. Now it's your turn with questions. Thank you.
So thanks, Gustav, for the great presentation and the also great personal and group work in Navi Server. We all appreciate that. Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, while others are thinking, I will ask a question. Do you aware of all the performance work which was done in TCL 9.0 about list performance by Ashok and also alloc performance? So for large blocks, we are just in the beginning of what do we do with large data. Do you have any experience with this stuff?
I mean, we have a lot of experience with large data. But maybe the first thing I have to commit is that I'm normally not using TCL thread alloc at all because it's quite slow and it is using a lot of memory waste. And I have a patch, it's called system alloc, where I more or less replace this everything which is happening under TCL private malloc operations is going directly to think. And therefore, I mean, there was a time when they public available system mallocs, the operating system provided ones, were not good, but it has changed. I mean, Linux has become much better, also Mac OS has become much better, and there's also a very good library maintained, especially for a multi-thread application by Google. It's called tmalloc, and if you're interested in stuff, I have there a lot of data how to compare performance there. I mean, in terms of malloc, I think it's very hard to compete with the I mean, it's a problem not only TCL has, the whole world has it. I mean, also if you run whatever, any kind of multi-threaded environment, you have to deal with this kind of thing. And it's, I think it's not really useful to compete with this there on the whole level. I mean, having an alternative is always good, but anyhow. But the other thing, I mean, dealing with lists certainly is something, the question is update of lists and inserting something in the first place, whatever. I mean, I've not seen it as a bottleneck there. The main bottleneck we have there is more or less shuffling data in and out. It's not updating lists. It's something where you're getting database queries, and database queries are returning hundreds of thousands of tuples often, or even more. And this has to be reused and read there, and therefore it's not really based on TCL lists. Therefore, I'm not sure what the performance implication, especially for Navi Server plus current OpenSS will be, but certainly it is your mileage might vary. I mean, you have libraries and you call TickleLib and whatever TickleLib does, I mean, everything benefits there, and therefore it's quite important. I mean, roughly the tickle time of the thing I've not shown in the presentation is, it's about a quarter of the time is tickle time of the requests, of the average request time. Therefore, even if tickle is running in zero time, the difference won't be so great. I mean.
Thank you. I also want to ask Reinhard, who is watching TK chat, if there's anybody online having questions. And I think Stefan is on the OpenACS world online. So if you have any questions, I want to thank those guys to monitor it. And I want to also welcome all people being here online. Thank you.
Okay. All questions answered. It's good. Yeah.